Was it at the live podcast? Was that your first time ever having that foo-foo type coffee?
No, because
you
had me
get what I got.
No. Okay. Honestly, I either want like best Italian espresso or give me sprinkles. Welcome to season one, episode 22 of the Swift Over Coffee podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
And I'm Sean Allen.
This is the season finale. Because after this, after episode 22, we're getting, a well-earned break ahead of season two starting later in the year.
Yeah, I've kind of already been on break. Like after Dub Dub, I just kind of threw my hands up. I was like, this is too much. I'm just going to chill for a little bit. Because you may not know, I am going full-time content creation on July 1st. So I'm kind of saving all that content, kind of building it up for the July 1st. So yeah, it's been a long break for me. It's been fun. And other big news, many people have seen it probably, is that I am leaving San Francisco at the end of July. I've done my time here. Been here about 5 years, became a developer here, built a network. Now I need more space. And believe it or not, space is not cheap here in San Francisco. So looking to move on from this big city. What have you been up to since we last saw each other?
It sounds like you're settling down, Sean. You're becoming domesticated.
I'm pushing 40. It might be time for it.
So let's see. So we recorded it on Wednesday during Dub Week. The following day, I had the wonderful privilege of getting to go to Apple Park, having a tour of Apple Park with some friends there. And it was so kind of them. I had like 3.5 hours to wander around, see various parts, have coffee, have food, see the duck pond, you know, really admire the place. It's a beautiful environment. But now I'm back. I'm over the jet lag. And I've now just said that my first Hacking with Swift conference, which takes place in about 2 weeks from now, has sold out. We sold all our tickets, which is amazing news. I'm glad about that. That's another charity event.
Yeah, congratulations.
And yeah, and before then, I'm speaking at Swift Island in Texel, Netherlands. So there's all sorts going on right now. You know, Dub Dub's happened. It's been big and amazing and exciting, but I'm thrown right back into it. There's no time off. I get straight back to work straight away.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it. I'm enjoying this little break that I took, but I am looking forward to getting back into creating some content.
And before we get into the news, Sean, do you want to tell listeners what's going to happen in the episode?
Yeah, I guess I can let them in on the little secret. Because this is the season finale, we want to go out with a bang until we come back for season two. We're going to do a giveaway that we hear about at the end of the episode. You're going to get stacks of books from Paul and myself, mostly from Paul because he's got a whole library. Some of us don't have that library, Paul, but hey, I'm doing my best with my one book. But anyway, you're going to get stacks of books, so stay tuned for the giveaway at the end of the episode. All right, Paul, let's talk about some news. And of course, we have to talk about the biggest news, you know, that happened probably in the past couple of years in the Swift community. I shaved my beard. Can you believe that? I shaved the beard. It's gone.
So listeners, you may not realize this. We actually record the podcast via Skype. So you can see each other as we're talking. And I tell you, Sean looks 10 years younger. He is a young man once again. Obviously, he always was, you know, particularly strapping. But now he looks young again. I think he's raring to go for his move to the East.
Yeah, the baby-faced developer is back now. That's what. So I'm gonna leave it this clean-shaven face for, you know, a little bit. But yeah, we'll grow it back eventually. But you know what? Now that, you know, I'm going full-time content creation, I don't have the Silicon Valley software developer salary. You know, beard oil gets expensive. You know, sacrifices had to be made. I got to make some budget cuts. You know.
I think clean-shaven's pushing it slightly. You know that you've got this sort of permanent 5 o'clock shadow look, I think, you know?
That's because I don't even like have a razor. So I just have the clippers taking it down to the lowest thing. I never
did. Also, if the shadow went, you'd probably get stopped to buy beer. Say, can you show me some ID, sir? You
know? For sure. Yeah, yeah. I'm 37 years old going on 19, basically. So, all right, but all seriousness, the actual first news story we have is a pretty good article by Brent Simmons titled "The Next Era Ends, The Swift Era Begins." It's a pretty short article, but I loved it. And I think it really highlights the turning of a page, if you will, for Apple. Now, the Next Era, if you're not familiar, Next was the company Steve Jobs started in the I think late 80s, early 90s. Anyway, Apple ended up buying Next in 1996. But that's where like Objective-C and Cocoa and, you know, UIKit was eventually a modernized version of Cocoa, et cetera. That's where all that came from. And that era kind of lasted about 30 years. But now with Swift, Swift UI, Combine, It seems like we're embarking on like the next 20 to 30 years of development in Apple in, you know, it's the new Swift era.
I thought it was really impressive. You know, Brent obviously knows his stuff. He's been working at Apple's platforms for a long, long time. And it's interesting because I've been kind of stuck in this, like a boiling a frog situation. you know, I hadn't seen the bigger picture. That's, you know, that's the old story of, you know, if you want to boil a frog, you should increase the temperature slowly rather than tossing it in boiling water. Otherwise, it'd recognize the heat and leap out.
Where do you hear this stuff? Was this a children's tale that you were told? I've never heard this.
Yeah, I had pretty vicious children's stories, apparently. But the point is that I was still seeing Swift as a series of incremental changes. Yeah, you know, the language launched, and yes, it got better, and yes, Apple's Objective-C frameworks are being annotated to make Swift more useful, and yes, in CreateML, we had our first Swift-only framework, but I was still seeing it quite narrow, and I think this article really helped me sit back and look at the big picture. This really is the end of the next era. You know, as we record this, actually, just last week, Jean-Marie Hulot passed. He died. And he was one of the original developers of IB, of Interface Builder, way back in the 80s. And that's how long this stuff lasted us. And I hope the Swift era lasts as long. I know, obviously, things are changing much, much, much more quickly these days, but it does still seem like amazing news, particularly for folks like you, Sean, because, you know, you're a dedicated Swiftie. This must be as good as it gets, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've called myself a Swift baby because that's when I came into this industry. And I think a ton of people came into this industry with Swift. So for those of us like myself that have only been around for, you know, three, four, 5 years, whatever, yeah, we're right here at the beginning of this new era and couldn't be more excited.
Actually, this could be really fun for you because this is the first time a key skill you've learned is now becoming effectively legacy at some point. Not today, not for a few years perhaps, but at some point people will say, wow, you used to do UI kit.
right. Back in my day.
Yeah, exactly. with our combines.
Yeah, table view controllers. Yeah, exactly. Next up, let's talk about some two repositories that I think are pretty useful. The first one is the WWDC 2019 session notes by Stefan Harald. The repo contains bullet points notes on, you know, each of the videos. And the idea here is to quickly skim through some bullet points to get the highlights of what the sessions are, to see if you want to dig a little deeper and actually spend, you know, the 40 to 60 minutes to actually watch the session. Because we all know Apple puts out a ton of videos and it's damn near impossible to like watch them all. So having these bullet points to go look at and then say, oh, that's interesting, let me watch that session, I think is incredibly useful.
You know, a lot was written about DubDub this year, including a fair chunk by me. But I think this GitHub repo, backed up by Patrick Balestra's excellent What You Might Have Missed blog post, they were just two of the most important things I've seen this year because, you know, I've been working through DubDub, everything from there, for 3 whole weeks now. And I still feel like I'm only, I don't know, halfway there. Like anything can help bring features to light, give them recognition, give folks a head start, is so welcome. And particularly because there is no useful way of browsing this information.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. As somebody who I think I've watched, bear with me, Paul, don't hate me, I think I've watched maybe 4 sessions total from WWDC. Like, I really haven't touched it yet.
So ever.
I think it's going to be...
All WWDCs ever.
Not of 2019. But so when I do dive in, again, July 1st, this is going to be super helpful to know exactly where to start, where to go. So couldn't agree more there. And the next repo is kind of similar. That is called About Swift UI, and it's a Swift UI resource repo by Juanpe Catalan. And it's just a ton of links to Swift UI learning resources. Paul, you were guilty, but the community kind of went crazy creating all this Swift UI content, and there is a ton of it. So this is a repo that kind of collects all those links. You know, it's broken down into WWDC videos, tutorials, official documentation, books, courses, articles, etc. Nothing from Sean Allen yet. You know, be on the lookout for there in a few months. But yeah, Paul, have you seen this repo?
It's a very helpful starting point, or at least it was. And I'm glad it existed because in those early weeks, you know, the first week or two after DubDub, folks want to know how to do stuff. How do I do this? How do I do that? Where can I find information? And there was nowhere. And Apple don't link to third-party stuff ever, if possible. Officially, at least, anyway. So that's a problem. And having that big list was helpful. Now, I'm not sure that at this point in our, you know, as SwiftUI is so mature now, we're a few weeks on now.
We are in beta 2, after all. Might as well be old news, you know?
Right, well, exactly, yeah. Because it's basically a big, long list of stuff, uncurated, unordered, undescribed, I'm not sure what the long-term use of that is, because no one's going to sit and read through all the article links. Because they contain duplicated material, like how to do lists or whatever. You might not like the author or the style. It could be easy or hard. There needs to be some sort of level of curation for this to become useful in the long term. So I'm not sure where that's going to go, but I guess we'll see.
All right, Paul, as with every episode, let's talk about our picks. What do you got for us?
So my pick this time is a Swift UI feature. Now, hold with me. I know it's more Swift UI, but it's a Swift UI feature. It didn't make it into beta 1, which confused all sorts of people because it was shown off on the WWDC stage. But it finally landed in beta 2. And that actually makes me think that, you know, they were all basically running beta 2 on stage because beta 2 is exactly what they showed off. You know, all the things that weren't quite right in beta 1 mysteriously are resolved in beta 2. But it's as good as they showed off, and it's really, really nice. It's the new forms system, and it's my pick, partly because it wasn't possible to talk about it before, you know, last time, but because I think it also represents the pinnacle of what a declarative user interface gets us. Have you seen it already, Sean? Forms?
Yeah, I mean, even though I haven't written a line of code of Swift UI yet, I have watched all the sessions at DubDub, so I have seen the form, and it feels like magic. You just change it from a list to a form, and it completely changes. You know, so that's all I've seen of it. Tell me more about it, though.
Right. So it's like a stack. So you might have a vertical stack, a V stack, or a horizontal stack, a H stack, or whatever. But it's a stack of stuff. But when you use them, they do something quite marvelous. They force components inside them to adapt their design and their behavior. So they look and work differently. And that makes them perfect for things like setting screens or ordering screens or whatever. Anywhere where the user is required to fill in multiple options with text entry, pickers, toggles, steppers, and sliders and whatever, right? But by telling Swift UI that this thing is a form rather than just a sort of stack of unrelated components, our UI adapts. You know, the whole screen becomes instantly a scrolling table of options. Our pickers adopt a different style, different behavior. Our buttons become tappable blue rows rather than regular iOS buttons. It just adapts itself perfectly.
Yeah, and that's kind of the magic I was talking about. It seems just, like I said, I haven't played with it, you have, but to me, all this just seems too good to be true. Like, I'm waiting for the catch. That was my biggest thing that I'm skeptical about Swift UI. And again, I'm saying that with a disclaimer that I haven't touched it yet, so of course I don't fully know.
Sean hates it.
Feels too magical. I don't know. I can't wait to get in there and play with it.
Like I said, I think it comes down to what it means to be declarative. You know, we're saying we want a picker. That's what we want to have. Not it should be a spinning wheel thing. You know, we want to have a picker, and it's down to the platform to figure out how that should look based on the context it's in and the environment it's in. And that might be a spinning wheel in iOS, it might be a table view row, but on macOS we get a drop-down menu instead.
Yeah, and that's kind of my whole thing with this is I feel like when you play in this neat little sandbox, you're going to get all this amazing stuff for free, but as soon as you step out of that sandbox, you don't get all the amazing stuff. And again, I know this is 1.0 Swift UI. It's going to grow. I do believe it's going to be great.
Why do you hate Swift UI so much, Sean?
I know. I'm just a hater. No, I do want to clarify. I think it is great. I think it is the future. I can't wait to start playing with it. My reaction to that, again, was just I think everybody went overboard a little bit on the love. And I was like, wait a minute. That's all. But no, it's going to be great. I love it. I'm on board.
Anyway, that's my pick. What's your pick this time, Sean?
Yeah, so my pick this time is a article from Matt at NS Hipster. It's his WWDC 2019 recap, but specifically focusing on one section of it, right? We already know what got announced at DubDub. We don't need to hear that. But it's the section that starts off with the clever heading of Mind the Enthusiasm Gap. And essentially what he's saying here is, you know, Apple announced so much stuff at WWDC. Like, don't feel bad if you haven't spent every waking hour like working with Swift UI. You know, that doesn't make you any less of a developer. You're not like falling behind. You know, this is still brand new. And I wanted to talk about this because I've seen, you know, some developers express that opinion. They're like, man, I haven't had a chance to touch Swift UI yet. I feel like I'm falling behind. So I thought this was good to talk about, especially because Paul and I have taken two completely opposite approaches here. Like, Paul, you've put so much content out there around this. Well, like I mentioned earlier, I've kind of been on a content creation vacation since DubDub. Like, and I mentioned I haven't written a single line of Swift UI code yet. And again, I'm kind of saving that for when I go full time and this will be my life. But of course, this is kind of your life right now, Paul, right? Because creating content for this community like is your job. So you're in a unique position to go like all in on this stuff early.
One thing I say in my book on Swift UI, which is online, completely free to read, Swift UI by example, is that it is effectively my notes on Swift UI. I haven't tried to write, you know, here's project one, do this thing, project two, do that thing. It's not designed to teach you Swift UI. It's designed to be literally my notes on Swift UI written out carefully formatted, of course, look nice on the web, but still my notes, right? And that happens. I mean, that's made possible because I'm extremely fortunate to be able to spend so much of my time experimenting with Swift and all related technologies like UIKit and Core Graphics and Core Image and Core NFC, whatever, and just be able to go wherever my interest takes me. And I think my readers appreciate that. I think I come across as being very excited about Swift UI, because I am excited. And I was saying to someone at Apple recently, you know, this is my 10th year doing iOS development, and I'm still as excited today as I was 10 years ago, because I just love all the amazing things I can make. My brain's overflowing with ideas, things I want to talk about, write about, think about, try. And that only happens because I get to work on whatever takes my interest. So I'm very, very lucky. And that's where it came from, I think.
Yeah, and I agree. And it's kind of how my approach to it and why I'm kind of hanging back is because, like I mentioned when we talked about earlier, I do believe Swift UI is the future. I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's not a hot take of development in the Apple ecosystem. So like I said, I'm taking the long-term approach, which is why I haven't even started yet. Like they just released beta 2, maybe beta 3 by the time you're listening to this. And there's still features coming out, like Paul just mentioned, like Forms was just released. So it's still super, super early. And not to mention, before like I can create content, I have to learn it myself. Like, this is all new to me as well. And I think a lot of people out there are in the same boat who may not have messed with reactive programming or RX Swift. Like, I never touched that stuff. So this whole declarative and, you know, way of doing things is all brand new to me. So I got a lot of learning to do myself, and the content creation will come with time.
I think we all have a lot of learning to do because it is all new. And that's kind of why I think I enjoy doing what I'm doing, right? I know that, I mean, I'm writing Swift UI nearly all the time right now. I'm writing it constantly. I write it just fluently, type it on the keyboard, it just works. I'm past sort of stumbling blocks I had in the first few days. And that just comes through practice, comes through just rote repetition, going over it again and again and again, making the same sorts of apps 100 times, 1,000 times, refactoring, improving each time so that in 3 months' time, 4 months' time, when iOS 13 finally ships, I've already been through 5 refactors. I already figured out, wow, that bit sucked, this bit sucked, that didn't work. I know why to get me in a certain direction. So that's my plan. There's so many things. Just try them out, make them work really, really hard, ask questions early, get them answered early, refactor as many times as I can. So when I finally have something, I'm feeling confident in it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something to be said for jumping in right away. You get that experience. But again, the whole point of this discussion was to, like, don't feel like you have to do that. No. There's nothing wrong with doing that, but don't feel like you have to do that, you know? Like, Swift UI literally isn't even a 1.0 yet. Like, we're in beta 3. I mean, it's going to take a couple years to be beta 2. Well, I'm assuming beta 3 is coming out Monday when this comes out. Maybe I shouldn't assume that.
No, surely not. Beta 2 was like 6 days ago.
Anyway, for the laggards that are listening to this a few days after Monday release date. Either way, it's early, right? That's the point. And it's going to take a couple years to be like fully ready, like just like Swift itself. So yeah, I mean, we're a few years away from Swift being in any meaningful like production app. So take your time. I want to leave this topic on one little note that's tangentially related, and it comes down to the whole, you know, if you're asking yourself which technology stack to use, Swift UI, UIKit, you know, all these questions people always have. And I really love this quote from Matt, so I'm just going to go ahead and read it verbatim. It says, "Your ability to communicate and collaborate with others will always be a better predictor of success than your choice of technology stack." So I love that quote. Communication, portraying your ideas is so important, way more important than, you know, which tech stack you use.
And now it's time for the last open ballot of season one. We asked you, now the dust has settled, what was your favorite new feature announced at DubDub that isn't Swift UI? We had so many answers. Unsurprisingly, it was a huge event. Let's kick off with voice control. Baz Burek said, not only a great accessibility feature showing why Apple is best at it, but also incredibly useful to verify / test features for developers. I can see it lowering the barrier to invest into accessibility, which is a huge win. I think Baz nailed it. I mean, it's obviously a remarkable feature. You know, when you watch folks using the old school switch control where, you know, you aim a line, then draw down the line to set the tool and so forth, it works. It made tools accessible for everybody. But voice control is significantly easier for many, many, many people. And it just seems to work everywhere.
Yeah, I've never used voice control myself, but I have a cousin who is blind who I've like watched him use his iPhone, and I was like amazed even him using the old voice control. So happy to see this, you know, really take a step up. And I think this was probably one of the most impressive things about the keynote in my mind. I remember the chat in my live stream going nuts when this was announced. I think everybody just loved this. And I don't know if you saw, they even made this into a commercial during the NBA Finals. Like, it was that big a deal. It was, you know, a big time commercial during the NBA Finals.
I missed the NBA Finals. Sorry, man. I missed. I must have been sleeping or reading a book or something. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Sports. But yeah, no, this was, I think, universally applauded. Love it. And yeah, that one really impressed me when they said, like, long press on number 20, where the picture of the map and it like zoomed in to the map square. Like, it was just awesome. Yeah. Can't wait to dive in and try this out. Don't you get a lot of this stuff for free with SwiftUI as well?
They've done a very good job. They had someone in working on accessibility from, I think, day one. So it is baked into large parts of SwiftUI. It does so many things that are really, really clever. Like when you group things together, it reads them as sentences rather than individual labels. It's very, very clever. I just wish it did the same thing for testing, because the testing thing's a little bit behind. Anyway.
Paul, who really cares about testing? Come on.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what Apple do anyway. I have some friends on the testing team, and there aren't very many of them, but they work very, very hard, and I do appreciate their work. Anyway, moving on, we have answers about the Combine framework. Neil Macy says, Combine, while it's been massively overshadowed by SwiftUI, I think it has as much potential to change how you write software. I spent the last couple of weeks cleaning up a lot of code on personal projects. And Steve Riggin says, I choose Combine not because I know enough of it to compare to other frameworks of the same ilk, because Apple started to plant best practices flags for more aspects of how apps are structured on iOS.
Yeah, I like what Steve was saying here about Apple, you know, planting best practice flags, because I've never done this type of programming. You know, again, the whole Swift baby thing, I've only kind of done it one way. So this is all new to me. And I do like kind of Apple giving a little more kind of rigid best practices, like you said, a little more guidance. So looking forward to diving into this, playing around with it, and learning something new. It's going to be my life for the next few months. So can't wait.
It is interesting seeing Apple catch up to the rest of the world in this one. Some people in our community like to sneer at JavaScript, when actually JavaScript has really been leading the way in so many places. I mean, they had reactive programming, like with React, for a long time, years before we did. They had, you know, Redux. Even we haven't even got close to Redux today, with Combine, even with SwiftUI. So they're leading the way in many respects. And, you know, Apple is only really now giving us tools to do better dependency injection. Small change they made in iOS 13, you can now use storyboards with DI, which is, you know, amazing. Finally, only 8 years after storyboards landed, we can now do dependency injection using them. And the same for testing, they're catching up on that front constantly. Anyway, moving on, we have answers here about signing with Apple. Isaac Richardson says, it's so easy to click sign with Facebook without thinking about the huge amount of data you're handing over to Facebook, and no more pesky emails. Travis Walters says, I've downloaded so many apps to immediately delete them because they only offered Facebook or Google as a sign-in for an account that really didn't need to exist to begin with.
Yeah, I'm right there with Travis on this. If you only offered a sign-in with Facebook or Google, I was like, not happening. This was probably my favorite announcement of DubDub, more than SwiftUI, because I hate SwiftUI. But hopefully people can pick up on the sarcasm in the running joke.
It's now the episode title. I'm going to make that guaranteed.
Right. I don't need to explain the joke. There was a tweet that went wrong. Anyway, I don't hate SwiftUI, but I am really a fan of signing with Apple, because again, I don't want to sign in with Facebook. I don't even have a Facebook account anymore, or Google. So love having this option. And a note, many people know this already, but in case you don't, if you do offer sign in with Facebook or Google, it is going to be required that you also give the sign in with Apple option. So if you're using those two things, you better learn sign in with Apple.
I think what's going to happen is we're going to see very, very quickly Facebook and Google sign-ins going away in many, many places, because what will happen is folks like me will see three options: Facebook, Google, or Apple. Apple doesn't have to be first, but it has to be visible without scrolling. That's the rule they've got. And we will all choose Apple. Mm-hmm. If you care about anything to do with your privacy or your device, you'll choose Apple one again and again and again. You just will. And that makes Facebook and Google sign-in basically a liability. Like, this is extra work, putting an extra framework, adding extra code for things that a shrinking number of people are using. Now, fair enough, some folks chose this thing, a year ago, 2 years ago, they're stuck on Google, stuck on Facebook for signing for that service. Everyone knew we'll just choose Apple every single time. And one to end on, we have Bastion Inuk saying, I'd have to say the controller support. I never expected for Apple to release grip on something, and not at all at WWDC. I was expecting Apple Arcade to be a way to sell more controllers, but they did the unexpected, and now I don't have to purchase a SteelSeries Nimbus.
Yeah, I was pretty pumped about this as well, as kind of my new side endeavor is streaming video games on Twitch, so this kind of opens up a whole new platform, if you will, of the Apple Arcade games. Not to mention I'm working on a game myself as my first kind of indie app, still in the planning design phases of that. So yeah, super excited to see actual Xbox and PlayStation controllers being able to be used with, you know, your iPhones and iPads.
You know, I wonder whether this came about just because Apple Arcade. Like, you know, developers, you know, go make games. It's great. Go and make games. And we do. And we go, well, this sucks because we haven't got a controller. And Apple like, yeah, it'd be fine. Just it'd be fine. And then they have to make their own games, or they're funding their own games now, and they're having people saying, listen, this really does suck. We need better controllers here, Apple. Apple go, okay, fine. Now it's our money on the line. We'll let you use actual real controllers. Because you get, you know, you can plug in a DualShock from PS4, you can plug in an Xbox controller, and apparently it just works.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obvious that it is for sure because of Apple Arcade, right? I don't know if that's a wonder. I think that's a pretty definitive.
I'm looking forward to it because I've never played games on Apple TV after the first 2 weeks of having one. And because, you know, you need a controller. You just do. And if they manage to release an Apple TV 4K, I don't know, version 2, with the latest sort of 10S or at least 10 series of GPUs, which are very, very powerful devices, we should see a new influx of games, like a real resurgence of tvOS as a platform with those great controllers, with significantly improved 4K graphics. They could really lead the way. So I'm hoping against hope. We'll see.
Yeah, have you played a game with a TV remote as a controller?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I played Jetpack Joyride when it came out. It's not much fun at all. It's not much fun.
And that's going to wrap up this final episode of the season. Normally, we give you an open ballot, but hey, it's the final episode. We don't have that. So, Paul, what are you going to be doing this summer?
So, obviously, I'm going to Swift Ireland to speak there and have my own conference. I'll be in Toronto for SwiftTO, an inaugural Canadian conference there. So basically lots more Swift. How about you, Sean?
My life is changing, right? Mm. Starting a whole new chapter of my career as like a full-time content creator, moving back across the country, working on growing a beard again. There's lots of big changes coming for me over the summer.
But Sean, with us doing other things all summer without podcasting Swift over coffee, how will listeners stay Swifty all those summer months?
Yeah, there is one more thing. As I mentioned at the beginning, we have an incredible book giveaway to end season one with a bang. Everyone who takes part in this competition will get a free copy of Paul's new book, Swift UI by Example, and 5 very lucky winners will get a free book bundle of Paul's Swift Power Pack. That's a $150 value. And also my own book, It's Only Crazy Until You Do It, How I Became an iOS Developer, which is a $9 value. So that's a lot of reading to keep you busy over the summer. Paul, how do they take part in this?
Well, all you have to do, dear listeners, is write a tweet about your favorite clip of any of the Swift Overcopy episodes in season one. Just pick out something Sean or I said that you found informative or funny and tweet out that quote. Everyone who does that, every single person will get a free copy of Swift UI by Example. But if you use a podcast app that allows audio sharing, like Overcast, and you post the audio snippet of your favorite clip, just take it from our audio, post that to the internet, then you're in the running for the big prize.
All right, let me explain that real quick again. Tweet a quote from an episode to get Swift UI by Example, or share the audio clip for the big prize. There'll be 5 winners.
The competition closes on July the 8th, and we'll announce the winners on July the 10th. Please make sure you put @SwiftOverCoffee at the end of your tweet, not the start, so we can see it along with everyone else. Otherwise, it'll get lost in the mists of Twitter.
And that's going to wrap it up for season one of Swift Over Coffee. We've had a blast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you. We don't know when, but we'll see you soon.
Bye.